Welcome to the Swiss Info Podcast, a roundup of the biggest stories from this week in Switzerland, plus the business and cultural highlights.
Thank you for downloading our program. I'm Justin Hanne. This week, Geneva debates the resting place of a revolutionary whore. The Swiss government ponders Guantanamo, dog sledders take to the Alps, and a skier goes down at high speed.
Stille im Zielraum.
But first, editorialists at Switzerland's newspapers greeted the inauguration of Barack Obama on January 20th with cautious optimism. They see hope and a fresh start as America's 44th president begins his term in office. They say Obama is the best man for the job, but that in time he will have trouble living up to the lofty expectations.
January 20th, 2009 is a day that must be remembered. Suddenly, in the midst of winter and an unprecedented crisis, an oasis emerged, heated by a human river. The greyness was lifted and replaced by a few moments of fleeting happiness.
Obama will have to take unpopular decisions if he wants to return growth to America and stability to the world.
As someone who in his campaign played more on people's emotions than virtually anyone else, Obama should be aware that positive feelings can rapidly turn negative when hopes are disappointed.
Suspected terrorists held at the Guantanamo Bay detention camp may soon be finding new homes. On January 21st, Switzerland said it was prepared to consider accepting prisoners released from the Cuban base. The government had previously said it was up to the United States government to deal with the issue, but the spokesperson for the cabinet, Oswald Sieg, said authorities in Bern were open to cooperation.
Today, in light of the statements from the American president, they've decided to address this question clearly, and in that sense, to try to help the Americans solve the problem of Guantanamo.
In business, luxury watch firms are putting on a brave face at a trade fair in Geneva, despite some really brutal market conditions. The fair's January 19th opening coincided with a grim forecast by Richemont, owner of the Cartier brand. The Geneva-based watchmaker says times are exceptionally tough and exports, according to the Federation of the Swiss Watch Industry, fell by more than 15% last November. In skiing, Switzerland's Daniel Albrecht had to be airlifted to hospital after he took a major spill near the end of the legendary Streif downhill course in Kitzbühel, Austria. The 25-year-old lost control during the training run on January 22nd and flew around 50 meters through the air at a speed of close to 140 kilometers per hour. Albrecht, who is eighth in the overall World Cup rankings, was placed in an artificial coma the day of the crash after doctors discovered bleeding in the brain and a lung contusion, although officials said he is not in danger of immediate death. Geneva's most famous prostitute is courting controversy more than 3 years after her death. The remains of Griseldis Real, who died in 2005 at the age of 75, are scheduled to be transferred to Geneva's most prestigious cemetery by order of the city government. But that's also the place where the Protestant hero John Calvin is buried, and the issue has sparked an outcry. Supporters say that Real, who became known as the revolutionary whore on account of her role writing about the world's oldest profession, and who is also a social activist, deserves a place in the Cimetière du Roi graveyard in the French-speaking city. But opponents argue that burying Real, who in 1977 published a book listing her clients and their particular habits alongside Geneva's heroes, is an outrage. Griseldis Real closed up shop in 1995 at the age of 66. And now for the more unusual side of Switzerland. It may not become the latest diet craze, but one German woman has apparently lost some weight in Switzerland by spending a year in the woods. Police in Canton Bern say the 52-year-old woman, who was missing for 12 years, had been found in the wilderness near the Swiss capital. Otherwise, she appeared to be in good physical shape. It was, of course, a perfect story for the country's tabloid, The Blick, which splashed a photo of the unnamed forest dweller on its front page, clutching a knife and fork. After all this time, the woman just wanted pork schnitzel and French fries, the newspaper reported. The second and third pages led with a quote from the woman's sister. "You became thin," it read, and was accompanied by photos of a happy reunion and another from the dinner table where she would felicitously devour a small bowl of soup. The quote following, "Look, she can even eat a bowl of soup with a spoon." The woman, who had spent her time in a rudimentary shelter, appeared happy and put a positive spin on her time away from home. "It was actually never boring," she said. "I missed nothing, and I was always occupied." Well, thin may be in, but after a square meal, everybody would probably agree that you're better off out of the woods. Another way of burning off some calories? Running an 800-kilometer marathon in sub-zero temperatures. It might not seem very sensible, but what if you had to do it barefoot? In the snow? That's what a pack of top athletes faced in a punishing race that recently took place amid the Swiss-French peaks of the Porte du Soleil. Reporter Daniel Johnson finds out more.
It's well below freezing and dark in the Swiss-French mountains of the Porte du Soleil, and yet nearly 200 athletes are sprinting barefoot in the snow by torchlight in a special race. The race is called the Grand Odyssey. The participants belong to a select club. Their aim? To cover 800 kilometres of snowbound territory and climb 25,000 metres in just 10 days. That's the equivalent of Mount Everest three times over. 16 teams are well equipped for an epic journey. Most of them wear fur coats. And they have four legs. These huskies, Alaskan and Siberian breeds, have been training hard for their snow marathon. They've had to. They have to pull their handler and sledge with all their belongings for the duration of the stage ending in the valley ski resort of Champéry. Now, in its fifth year, the Grand Odyssey attracts the world's best dog trainers, or mushers, and it has a reputation as one of the toughest races on the circuit. Unlike other competitions on the frozen flatlands of North America, the mountain climbs and descents tackled in the Grand Odyssey put severe demands on the teams, not to mention dangers, as Swiss trainer Emil Inouen explained at the finish camp.
I was just a little scared about the downhill. It was really, really fast and frozen and side hilly. We had problems to break the team down. Lots of turns, and I don't know how many uphills I didn't count anymore. But overall, great for sure.
And there were sledge problems for Sigrid Ekran, racing for Norway.
How did it go today for you, Sigrid?
It was really steep up and steep down and steep turns. And we flipped over a couple of times and had a little bit of trouble, but we got out of it pretty good.
With up to 10 dogs providing a pulling speed of 30 kilometres an hour, handlers rely on a twin-pronged tungsten claw attached to their sledge to slow down their pack, much like a ship's anchor. The handler also constantly shouts or whistles instructions to his dogs, though it doesn't always work. Here's Grand Odyssey technical director Valérie Duroté.
The musher can actually talk to the dogs and demand that they slow down. But the dogs are conditioned to go fast, to be powerful. So we have to say, gently, gently, slowly. But it doesn't always work because they're very enthusiastic. And during the descent, you have to let go a little. So it's not always easy to slow down.
Apart from the substantial risk of racing alone in the mountains, these high-performance dogs face another problem, race stress. It causes stomach upsets and dehydration, not the ideal combination for long-distance running. Here's vets Julie Méanger and Eric Thibault, part of a seven-strong team treating tired animals at the end of each stage.
Is there a problem here?
No problem. You don't want to eat the medication. They run tomorrow and they must be in a good condition, so we have to treat.
On en a là de réhydratant oral? It's a mixture of sugar and salt.
Okay, how do I give it to the dogs?
You put it directly in the mouth. Sometimes the dog drink after that. Mm-hmm. Okay, and yeah. If not, you try to put the water in the mouth with a syringe. Mm-hmm. Okay, glock, glock, glock.
Dr. Thibault just now with Swedish handler and 2008 race winner Peter Carlson. Later, Dr. Thibault explained the other common injuries and what the handlers do with dogs that are too tired to go on.
It's mostly leg injuries since the Grand Odyssey is characterized by steep gradients, up and down. Very often, the musher will place the injured dog in the sled since it must cross the finish line with all of the other animals. He's the last musher. I think he deserves a rest now.
Health issues aside, everyone seems happy with conditions in the Port du Soleil, which is better known for its skiing either side of the Swiss-French border. Here's Peter Carlson again.
It's very good snow conditions, so I like it a lot. I can go with good speed and I don't have to be afraid.
But you're all alone up there in the mountains. It's very dark and very cold.
Nah, but that's what I like.
Is it nice to see some of the public cheering you in as well?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and the dogs, they also like it. They always speed up when there is public around.
After the medical check, it's time to rest overnight. There's straw and a blanket for the dogs and a tiny tent for the handlers. The next challenge begins with a punishing 800-metre climb over an old smuggler's route above Morzine in the French Chablais and down into the Swiss ski resorts of Morgin and Champéry. So why do they do it? Swiss handler Jaco Alex Holman.
It's like a drug. It's to be what we are doing here. Be outside and see places normal people never can reach because they don't have the dog. And it's a relationship together. You just came to these places together. The dogs can't go alone to these places and I can't go alone to these places. So we need us together in this kind of relationship.
I hope you have a good night tonight.
Thank you.
That was Daniel Johnson reporting. And that brings us to the end of our podcast for January 23rd. Find out more on these stories and others at swissinfo.ch, and please turn on, tune in, and download again next week. Until we meet again, I'm Justin Hannes.